Good evening.
No, not connected to the farm.
Good evening.
I'm going to ask that the clerk call the roll so we can establish the presence of a quorum.
James?
Who?
James?
Oh, that's me. Here.
Jay?
Here.
Kibler?
Here.
Kurt?
Kurt.
Langenheim?
Here.
Maxwell?
Here.
McGinty?
Here.
Michaels?
Here.
Mitchell?
Here.
Mosier?
Here.
O'Connor?
Here.
Petrie?
Here.
Quisenberry?
Here.
Richard?
Here.
Rosales?
Here.
Schrader? Weibel? Alex?
Here.
Ammons?
Here.
Anderson?
Here.
Binzel?
Here.
Berkson?
Here.
Carter?
Here.
Coert? Ezri?
Here.
Holderfield?
Here.
Betts?
Here. We do have a quorum. The chair would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the Committee of the Whole of March 13, 2012, moved by Mr. Rosales, seconded by Mr. Carter. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. The chair would entertain a motion to approve the Strategic Planning Committee meetings of January 11, 2012, moved by Ms. Ammons, seconded by Mr. Ezri. Discussion, additions, or corrections? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Chair would entertain a motion to approve the agenda and any addendum, which I don't see. Moved by Mr. James, seconded by Ms. Coert. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the same. Motion carries. Public participation. I would ask Mr. McGinty to keep track of time. I don't think it will be a problem. Mr. Jeremy Bamberger.
Since this is kind of a waiting period for the jail facilities planning process, I'm just going to offer a bit of recap and make a request for clarity on one point. I've been showing up to these meetings for 2 months now, and in so many words, I've been trying to illustrate the fact that the jail space improvement project planning team has consistently repelled any attempt to make its functioning transparent to either this board or to the public, except where mandated by law. Only when a Freedom of Information Act request was filed did the public gain access to the team's correspondence, at which point we were able to observe a marked attitude of contempt for the public on the part of at least some of the team members. In addition, the response to the FOIA request made clear that certain members of the team had more information than they had let on during their early discussions on this issue. It seems clear to me that unless a compelling argument based on the Freedom of Information Act or the Open Meetings Act is formulated, none of us will have any understanding of how the infrastructure for this planning process is being established, nor will we have any insight into any possible bias that the team may have in the review and shortlisting of responses. The obvious and sustained public interest in this matter begs the question, why all the resistance? Why has the team maintained a policy of withholding any information or discussion it is not legally mandated to reveal? I call on the Jail Space Improvement Project Planning Team to voluntarily make all records of its business and discussion available to the public wherever disclosure is not prohibited by law. And failing that, I urge the board to demand transparency and accountability of the team legislatively. My question is about the contrast between the process followed by the development of this purchase request and that outlined in Ordinance 837, which defines purchasing policies for the county. The ordinance specifies in Article 5, Section C, Subsection 3, Letter A, that the head of the requesting department, in this case facilities, that would be Alan Reinhart, make the final determination of the quality and quantity of services to be requested subject to the approval of the Policy, Personnel, and Appointments Committee. Further, it specified in letter G of the same subsection that the analysis of the bids is to be submitted by the head of the requesting department to the policy committee, which then forwards its recommendations for the award of contract to the full county board. In Article 9, Section A, the ordinance sets out in no uncertain terms that any purchases which take place outside of these guidelines must first be approved by the county board pursuant to recommendation by the policy committee. I have two requests of Champaign's public officials in this regard. First, I would appreciate a comment from Ms. Busey on whether this circumvention of the established purchasing guidelines was intentional. And second, I would like Board Member Ammons to confirm as the head of the policy committee that the planning team never attempted to establish their RFP process as an exemption to the guidelines. Finally, I would like to acknowledge that I made an error last week in presuming that the planning team has access to the responses to the RFP prior to the May 25th due date. They do not. Thank you for your time.
Sarah Lazar.
Hello, my name is Sarah Lazar. I live at 412 West Illinois in Urbana. And I'm here today to cordially invite all of you to a public forum on the county board's proposal to spend $20 million on a new jail. This public forum is being presented by Champaign-Urbana Citizens for Peace and Justice. Speakers will include yours truly, Carol Ammons, who, as you know, is a county board member who opposes the jail proposal. It'll also include members of Decarcerate Monroe County, who will be coming from Bloomington, Indiana. And it will also include community members. So this will be a really great opportunity to hear from people in the communities that you represent what they would want to do with $20 million. What would make them feel safer in their communities. So if you're tired of seeing all of our faces, you can come see a lot of new faces at this really great event. We'd really appreciate your presence. So it's going to be at the Urbana City Council Chambers, 400 South Vine Street, on Friday, May 11th at 6 p.m. So again, that's Urbana City Council Chambers, 400 South Vine Street, Friday, May 11th, 2012, at 6 p.m. And we have a bunch of flyers for you, so I don't know what the best way is of handing these out. Should I hand them to you and then you'll distribute them? Okay. Thank you very much.
Public participation is closed. Communication from members of the board. Mr. Kurtz.
Thank you, Tom. I have just an announcement concerning a public meeting was held on April 3rd in Clinton concerning the Clinton landfill. It was a public meeting. There were many in attendance, and the Illinois EPA has now obtained an extension on their application for a renewal to the Clinton landfill. It seems there were quite a few comments and more to come, so they've extended their time limit for public comment. If you have any public comment concerning the landfill, I will give you the address of Stan Black, who is head of the Illinois EPA, if you have any comments you'd like to make. Thank you.
Any other communications from members of the board? Mr. McGinty.
Okay, thanks, Tom. For finance amendments and transfers, first one is the amendment number 14 in the coroner's office for $450 to, these are funds from the sale of a very old van and want to be used for the purchase of supplies for an autopsy suite. Is there a motion for approval by Mac, seconded by James? Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
That motion carries. Next up, an amendment number 15 for $6,800 out of EMA for a new grant, local emergency planning committee. Is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
By Stan, seconded by Al. Discussion? Carol?
Ms. Busey, can you give us a little bit about what this grant is actually for? What kind of grant this is?
It is a grant for an entity called the Local Emergency Planning Council, which includes representatives from both private and public partnerships to do training so that the community is prepared in the event of, for example, a hazardous material spill, that there, this provides an opportunity for all of these individuals to work together, develop procedural guidelines for how they will react and respond in that type of a situation. And this is a grant that the county board approved earlier this year.
And this goes through our EMA.
Correct, yeah.
Other questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Number three, and amendment number 16 for $28 whole dollars out of the auditor's office. I'm not even going to read it because it'll cost more than $28 to read it. Is there a motion for approval by Ron? Is there a second by Carol? Discussion? All in favor say aye.
$28. That's what I want to know.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Number four. An amendment number 17 for $1,800 out of the SOA's office. Annual stipend paid by the state is greater than budgeted for fiscal 2012. Is there a motion for approval? By Ralph. Is there a second? Stephanie, discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries. Dead. Did you want to go back? Good. Next up, letter B, the sheriff's office request approval to amend the Aramark Inmate Commissary Services Agreement. Is there a motion for approval by Diane, seconded by Jeff? Discussion. Lorraine.
Okay, I was looking, and I'm not going to be able to support this because I cannot support it, but the county's being the first to pay for the annual sale for this commissary that the inmates are buying.
The sheriff is here, but I can also let you know that the proceeds from these sales go into a special inmate commissary fund, and all of the proceeds are used for services and benefits for the inmates. They're not used for any other county operation. And the sheriff can provide a greater explanation if you want to hear from him.
Do you want to hear from him?
Yeah.
Sheriff?
Ms. Busey is correct. The Inmate Commissary Fund is a limited-use fund. It can be used only for the welfare of the inmates. It's something that's been in existence for quite a while. The county, this board has already approved a contract with Aramark for these services. It's a multi-year contract. At the time, if you remember, we had Administrator Mike Moore. He did not want the storage kept in-house. About the time Mr. Moore was leaving, you agreed to the contract. We executed the contract. Mr. Moore has left. We feel we can better serve the inmates by having the storage in-house. The new jail superintendent says he can do that. So, in essence, what we're changing is where we store all the stuff for the inmates. This actually results in a lesser, if you will, commission that goes into the fund because it costs Aramark more to keep the stuff on site than it does to send it out of their regional warehouses. But we think we can serve the inmates better by having it in-house. So really the only change you're doing is allowing me to keep it in-house. You're actually reducing the commission from 40% to 30%.
Okay, I had a couple of folks yet. Hold on. So first of all, Lorraine, did you have any follow-up?
Yeah, I'd like to know what kind of stuff that you're storing for the
inmates. Everything from toiletries to goodies, snacks, things of that kind. They also get fresh fruit and other what they call fresh favorites. This is provided by statute. Jails, prisons are supposed to have this kind of thing so that if, what the old superintendent used to say, it was the ho-ho fund. If they want to get some ho-hos, we offer it to them at least once a week. And it's other things, hygiene, things like that.
Anything else there?
If I can also add, in the agreement we signed, which is also very common, not just for us, it has to be priced at what I'll say community standard. So if I can go buy a Snickers bar for a dollar at the grocery store, they cannot charge $1.50 just because they have, you know, limited access. It has to be the community prices, and we've built that into the contract.
Okay, Sheriff, if you don't mind staying up here for a second. I've got a few of you, so hang on, because I've got, if you want to speak, if you didn't answer your questions, Carol, then Astrid, then Chris, then Jan, and then Ralph, and then Quiz.
I appreciate I communicated with the sheriff all afternoon on this issue. And I'm just interested in how the fund has been used in the last few years. Just for me, I'll follow up with you to make sure I can look at that. And the other thing is, in my gut, I'm wondering if we could. It just doesn't make sense to me that we save the 10% and still get a 30% commission somehow on these items that are being purchased by the inmates. And it seems to me, in my mind, because I shop a lot, that if I can get 30% discount on the item, I would save money. And so it don't seem to make sense to me that we're getting some 30% somewhere on these items that ultimately then go back to the inmates instead of giving them the 30% discount in the beginning on these items.
Many, many jails, not ours, many jails use this to fund what I would call normal operations. I think one could argue, for example, you guys remember years ago we modified the mental health and the medical contracts where we increased the services. The county board picked up the tab. I suspect there are jails in the state of Illinois and other states that actually use it for that. That's, I think, why the whole thing. Plus the cost of operation. We used to actually staff this in-house. Right now it's better, we think, to have Aramark provided as part of the food service. I'm sorry, you had a two-part question and I lost the other part.
I'm lost on the understanding, so it's hard for me to see the benefit to the inmate to pay an additional 30% somewhere on the pricing guideline to get 30% off later. It doesn't seem to make sense to me.
Okay.
And I've never actually had this experience. So.
Okay. Maybe if I can address this may help you. I mean, I don't know exactly why commissary was put into the statutes. I'm guessing what I told you is the reason.
Yeah, I got a whole book on it right here why they do this. But.
Okay. In terms of what the money's used for, it's generally those things I outlined to you. For example, every Christmas time, all the inmates get a pizza party. We give them what I call goodie bags. The commissary profits, if you will, pay for that. Inmate workers are paid a dollar a day and to work in the kitchen, do the laundry, things like that. We used to not have to pay them, but then we got to the point they didn't want to do anything, so now for a dollar a day they do that kind of stuff. Again, that comes out of that fund. Indigent haircuts, indigent hygiene kits. We bought, and don't hold me to this, we bought one or two oxygen concentrators because of their health problems. We used money out of that fund. We have to have law books for them. We bought extra law books, so there's multiple sets. That came out of that fund. That's what we use it for. I may have listed some other things when I sent you the email. I don't remember what all they were.
Carol, anything else on follow-up for now? Astrid, anything? Done. Chris?
I guess I was just a little bit confused, Sheriff. I understand the idea of the commissary fund, and I think, you know, I respect Carol's point, you know, why don't we just make everything 30% cheaper because a lot of these guys are having trouble paying for what we probably already got. But I guess I can understand the idea of the commissary fund, and the theory is this goes back and helps, you know, inmates who maybe can't afford anything or, you know, provides some creature comforts. But I wasn't clear on this eye care and fresh favorites thing because it looked like that. Is that 30% also go into the commissary fund?
Yes, sir. Oh, none of this money, as Deb says, goes to the county for operations. All the profit, and I'm going to call it profit, goes into this inmate trust fund.
Okay, because the agreement as it's written is kind of confusing. Paragraph 3, it's listed under 1, but it's paragraph 3. It says contractor shall pay a commission to the inmate trust commissary fund in the amount of 30% of net sales of all products except indigent kits and so on. And then under the eye care and fresh favorites, it says the county shall earn a commission in amount equal to 30% of net sales of all eye care and fresh favorites packages. It's not clear that that goes into the – that sounded to me like it just went into the county's pocket.
Okay. It It doesn't. Aramark worded it that way. I can only guess that's because other counties word it that way.
Okay, I mean, it's our choice what to do with it once we get it. But what you're saying is it goes into the commissary fund, just like there. So we're not taking the money on the fresh fruit and.
No.
Okay.
No.
All right. That wasn't clear from the agreement. I appreciate your clarification. And can you give me an idea how much money we're talking about here in terms of this 30%? Is this $100 a year, $1,000 a year, $10,000 a year?
It's in the thousands.
Actually, I have the budget up. It's about $28,000 a year.
$28,000 a year is the 30% or is the total sales?
That's what is 30%. Yeah, that's the 30%. I wish Teresa was here. And then again, weekly, I mean, we probably have, it's not a lot, but we probably have 15 trustees that are paid every day.
Sure.
I know the other. We bought them a popcorn machine not too long ago, but that's what it's used for.
That's not inmate meals and stuff, right? I mean, that's provided by the county. This is additional.
This is the extra. Literally the ho-hos, the Cheetos, the
sure, fruit.
Yeah.
Something that they don't get on the regular menu.
Right.
All right. Thank you.
Jan?
Well, that pretty much answers everything that I was really thinking about, but I did want to ask. I remember when we dealt with this a number of years back, it seemed to me that the inmates had some input into the kinds of things that you purchase through Aramark. Is that right or not? Do they have any, you know, like choice? We would like to have Cheetos.
I don't remember us, the board, and since I've been in here ever discussing it, so I'm not sure what you're referring to. I'm the one, my office approves the final list of things, and I've never actually asked the inmates what they want. Frankly, I suspect Aramark has a pretty good idea of what they want because really it's they're selling a product and they want to keep in house what's popular and what they want.
Ralph and quiz passed, and so we're to Stan. Stan?
Oh, I guess when I heard about this, I'm sort of reading it. I look at it's a fund that's being set up that they're maintaining and helping others that may not be able to have money to help themselves. And for lack of a better term, I think of Girl Scout cookies. I mean, they sell them to use the proceeds to help others within to go to camps and do what have you. Without this program, they would have nothing, basically, because the taxpayers would either have to fund it or it would just go away. Am I correct, Sheriff?
Right. I mean, if you said, okay, we're not going to do this, I would be coming to you guys. I would be coming to you and saying, hey, I need money for indigent haircuts and all these other things I just listed.
And, Carol, what I was trying to say there is, like, say five people are in there, three of them may be buying stuff and the other two can't afford it, but this is going into a fund that later, if they need a haircut from what I'm hearing or they need a toothbrush or something special, they also get some because that's what they're using the fund is to help everybody, just not those that are paying into it. And in life, I mean, in life, we all pay, and there are prisoners that still get some type of income coming in, whether they're in jail or not, just like Bernie Madoff.
Patsy?
Yes. Thank you. Two points. One, the first one is sort of a compromise. Is this 30% commission set, or is this something that can be discuss. I mean, I must say I'm very impressed with the $28,000 generation of funds from what the prisoners are able to buy. Makes me wonder where they're getting the money to generate that kind of income, but that's an aside. Does it have to be at 30% or can it be compromised at a lower percentage?
I can't speak for Aramark. Right now the percentage is actually 40, but they're supposed to have it not in-house, and I've agreed to keep it in-house because, again, it's better, which cost Aramark more. Long way of getting to your answer. I don't know, imagine Aramark cares. I mean, if you guys say, well, look, let's just take a 20% commission, then Aramark may very well say, okay, we'll knock whatever that 10% off the price or whatever that percentage works out. I'd have to sit down and run it. I don't guess they care. I don't know. Right now we have a contract that says 40%, but they have to keep it in their warehouses.
Okay, so that might open the door for some discussion of lowering this commission. And the second is just because this is a contract that they may boilerplate because they use it for other jails, the point that Mr. Alex made, that this wording has got to be cleared up so it's clear where this money goes, not to the county.
You can make a motion.
Okay, I'll make a motion right now. Page 17, number 3F, about the middle of the paragraph where it says the county shall earn a commission. This should read that the jail, what, please correct me on what is the exact name of this?
I think you could call it like they did in above it, inmate trust, parentheses, commissary fund. That makes it
okay.
Pretty clear.
That's the wording I want. Oh, I do? Okay. Tell me what that was again. Okay, the contractor shall pay a commission to the MA Trustees Fund. Oh, I see, Inmate Trust Fund. I see where it is. The commissary fund in the amount of... Well, I'd like to see it at 20% of net sales on all products.
Can I, if that's the way this board is going to go, the name change doesn't, Aramark won't care about that. But perhaps if that's the way you want to go, you want to give me some direction, because if you simply say that, then Aramark could very well say, okay, here's your 20%, and now we're going to keep 80%. And I don't think that's what you want to do.
Oh, okay. Thanks for that clarification. Okay, I need a suggestion on tightening up this wording from somebody else.
Why don't we go to some other people and then come back if
okay,
you don't mind.
Okay, thank you.
Diane. Then Lorraine.
I just have a question here. I thought we approved 40.
Yes.
You did.
And now what's happening is we're actually coming back and going to save the inmates and us some money by only taking 30. So in essence, we're really are saving them 10% at this point and then keeping it in-house, which does take us a little bit of our time and effort too. And if we're helping indigents, I can't see how we went ahead and passed 40 and now we're arguing about 30, I guess. Maybe I'm silly here, but.
Deb.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Sure.
You're right in that now we're moving it in-house. It will be a little bit more work for my staff, and it's always been in-house, because of the timing I said they could leave it. I didn't figure you guys would care how we managed it. Let me go back to what you said. If the Snicker bar cost $1, when we change this from 40 to 30, it only reflects how much comes back into the trust fund. It doesn't change the price at all for the inmate. It's still the dollar ho-ho or candy bar.
Yeah, we'll follow up.
And I would just follow up with, because you also have vending services contracts for your vending machines. So these items that are being provided through jail commissary are being provided at the same cost that the inmates would pay if they went to the store and purchased them. But instead of the store getting to keep the overhead benefit, it's going into the jail commissary fund to benefit the residents or the those who are in the jail. We do the same thing with vending machines in Champaign County. We use the revenue from the vending machine sales to pay for the annual employee recognition event. So the monies are used for the benefit of the employee without taxing the taxpayers for something that goes towards that. So effectively, I think if you're asking, just to be clear, I think what you're asking the sheriff to do, if you want to lower the percentage, you're also asking the sheriff to go negotiate that they provide these items for less than what the market cost or price is for these items.
I've got Lorraine next. Anything? Microphone, please.
I was going to ask is, it says commissary. Is this here the in-house commissary or the commissary where I marked sales packages of food that the family died for the event?
It's the same thing. The,
that we're talking about.
So they're making their money back up because they're charged with shipping and handling.
It's built in the price. If I can use my dollar candy bar as an example, the difference is it costs Aramark less if they have this picked in their big warehouse and once a week ship them to us and we don't keep it here. It actually costs Aramark less money, which is why they said, okay, you can have the 40% for the inmate commissary fund. It costs them more because they have to hire a part-timer here to go through it. They still have to ship the stuff periodically. But, I mean, it's not like an inmate pays an extra, $1.10 for the dollar candy bar for the shipping. I hope I answered your question.
No, shipping is added to the cost of the inmate package.
What the inmate buys, not, you may know something I don't know in terms of some sort of outside deal where something is shipped in, but in terms of what the inmates pay for, there's not an extra, I mean, I guess it's built in the overall price.
Okay, it's two kind of commissaries that you're dealing with, right? You've got the commissary where the inmate received money from family members to purchase stuff there in the jail.
Right.
Then you've got the commissary where the inmate's family is banned online from Aramark iCare.
iCare.
And they're paying for that, plus they're paying for the shipping and handling.
The last part of what you said, I don't know the answer. Okay, in terms of what they have online, I'm sorry, I don't know that answer. I'm not.
Online, and you know, you have to sign in to the Champaign County.
Who else, Gary?
Sheriff, how close does the revenue balance the expenses in this fund annually?
Most years the revenue is greater than the expenditures because we do limit it on what we spend. Again, we don't use it for the normal operations.
Please, could you speak a little louder, please?
About what would be the magnitude of the difference?
I don't know the answer to that without looking.
Thank you.
Thanks. Carol?
If I can just do one follow-up. So my understanding is what you described as a candy bar being a dollar, the county's commission comes out of that dollar. The inmate doesn't pay any more because you got this commission. That's what you're saying?
Right.
Okay.
The candy bar would be a dollar. The inmate commissary fund, not the county, would get 30 cents with this new deal, and then Aramark gets the other 70.
Yeah, the 70%. Okay. And then just apparently there's the eye care and fresh favorites are something separate from our vending. This is a separate piece, correct?
Eye care is a separate piece. Fresh favorites comes through the commissary in the jail, as far as I am aware. But it's different. Yeah, it's different than the normal buying the ho-hos off the list.
Okay. So I guess my concern is, and I'll work with you over the next week or so I can understand this. I won't vote yes for the contract at this point because I have a concern. The concern is clear to me, and I've been working on this issue for a while, is that a lot of these companies, including Aramark and other prison and jail providers, increase the profit line so that they can make a greater profit off of the jails and the inmates. In our case, we don't use the money like some other prisons and jails do to pay their budget line items. We just use it for our inmate commissary fund, which I think is good in principle. That's a good thing in principle. I'm concerned about the pricing points that we may have. I think what Ms. Colbert is trying to express, that there might be some two things going on with the commissary that, of course, I don't personally have experience with, that I'd like to work with you and get clarity on this issue before the board meeting. So I'll make sure that we do that, because I'm still a little, I don't understand why we could not reduce the cost of the items, even if the fund balance exceeds what our costs are to run this, and Aramark increases the cost, obviously, for them to sell whatever it is that they're selling to the county. So in essence, we could reduce the cost of the items, and we might be reducing, yes, you're right, we might be reducing the commission that we get meaning not we, but the commissary fund, that you might actually be reducing that cost, but you're reducing the overall cost of the items, which is what I'm concerned about. In the same case that we had when we had to deal with the jail phone contract, this was exorbitant, and we all know that the industry raises the cost up exorbitantly, and then some communities make money off of those deals and those contracts. And so this is the one that reason why I emailed you all day today about this, but we'll come back to that, I think.
Ask me.
A little surprised that the oxygen concentrators came out of this. Why is that not covered by the medical coverage?
Question of how many, I believe, and don't hold me to this without me checking, I believe the medical bought one and I thought it wise to have a second for their benefit, but I don't hold me to that. I need to check. We didn't have oxygen concentrators. We used to rent them, which medical would pay for, but I thought it prudent to have at least one, and then the way things have gone, two, in-house so that we'd have it sitting there even if it's not used, but it's ready when they come in. And I do, personally, I think that is a proper use of commissary funds because it is for their benefit.
Is there anything else? Is it, all right, first of all, is there anybody else who hasn't already spoken that wants to speak? Stephanie, then Patsy.
Can we call the question, please?
I'm gonna bypass to hear what Patsy has to say, and then we can wrap this up. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I've clarified the motion that I'd like to make. Ms. Ammons wants to continue her conversation with the sheriff on some parts of this, but in lieu of that information that eventually will come back to us, I do want to clean up this one sentence in 3F where it says the county shall earn a commission, and I moved to change it from the county shall earn to the inmate trust fund shall earn.
Second.
Motion by Patsy, seconded by Chris. Any discussion or sheriff, any comment or anything?
I don't think Aramark will care. I will tell them we'll just insert the same words, inmate trust, parenthesis, commissary fund, and strike out the word county. And
any other discussion on the motion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion still carries. Anything else before we vote on the motion as amended? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thanks, Sheriff.
Thank you.
State's attorney's request for approval of State of Illinois renewal and amendment of intergovernmental agreement between Department of Health Care and Family Services and Champaign County's State's Attorney for support enforcement July 1, 2012 to June 30, 2013. Is there a motion for approval by John? Is there a second by Max? Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Deb.
The General Corporate Fund Fiscal 12 Budget Projection Report is at your desk this evening. It looks fairly stable. Revenues are in areas of sales tax coming in well, basically at budget or a little above, with the exception of the corporate personal property replacement tax and income tax. We have the $535,000 shortfall we anticipate in state reimbursement this year. But even with that, overall, we're looking right now at a 99% achievement of revenue, a shortfall of about $220,000 this year. I will point out, too, that general government, which is our fees revenue for the first time in many months, is actually it was a good month, and it looks like we're going to hit our budget for fees. There's been some improvement in collections, which is probably also a reflection of the current economy improving somewhat. On the next page, expenditures, we look like we're underspending in personnel at this point. However, in all areas of commodities, it looks like we will spend more than what was budgeted. Also, under services, we're underspending with the exception of medical professional services, which the majority of that is the sheriff's budget for medical services at the correctional centers. Bottom line, we are looking like we're going to spend 99% of the general corporate budget, underspending by about $237,000. So the net effect is that at this point, we would look like our fund balance would remain fairly stable by the end of this fiscal year.
Tom?
Maybe this is an inappropriate question. The chair can rule me out if he wants to. I read in the newspaper this morning that...
We can't hear it all, Tom.
I'm sorry. Medicaid is going to be $200,000 less at the nursing home. Has there been any intimation with regard to our budget in relationship to that potential shortfall?
No. The nursing home board and the nursing home management are looking for ways to improve revenue generation, both through, you know, census, through improved therapy services, which might have an impact on Medicare services, and other avenues that they're trying to look into to help offset that potential cut in revenue. So at this point, they're being proactive about finding other solutions to improve revenue in other areas.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
Deb, I don't know if you want to field this, or I see the treasurer sitting back there. What's the timing, typical timing of receiving the corporate personal property replacement tax? Because I know many small businesses, if not all businesses, pay that in March. So is that the case where, I mean, how do we know, how much we're going to get yet until all the... Or is it we don't know what we get until we get it?
We receive an estimate from the state in later, from the Department of Revenue, of what our revenue will be from July 1st through June 30th. But we never receive that. So for this July 1st, we'll be finding out soon. So when we set the budget, we never really know what it's going to be for half of our fiscal year at least.
Okay. So this is sort of a wild
guess
at this point.
So it's estimated. It's definitely estimated.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Deb on the budget projections? Okay.
And the budget change report, there is no change since last month.
Accept the motion to place on file. Moved by everyone. By Jeff, seconded by Stan. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
The next item is it's a cleanup item, and it's in preparation for the fact that you will be looking at approval of the guidelines and parameters for the fiscal 2013 budget in May. And your financial policies include policies with regard to grants, which are current and consistent. However, the original grant, the original ordinance establishing the grant procedures done in 2001 has been outdated for some time. So the recommendation that you have before you is to correct that and bring it up to how we currently work with this. There are basically a couple of changes. First of all, we no longer have parent committees defined in county board rules. So previously, departments who were bringing forward to the county board grant applications brought them to parent committees. The recommendation here is that designation be changed to the finance committee because effectively all grants will end up in budgetary changes or impacts. The second has to do with how the county board approves a grant, and in the grant ordinance that was written in 2001, basically, when a department knows it's going to apply for a grant, they come to you as soon as they know they're going to apply. Sometimes the application is due before your meeting occurs, so they may go ahead and apply and then come to the appropriate committee to get the application. But what you typically do as a board is you approve the application for the grant and that you will accept the award, so that all of that is done at one meeting of the county board. What the original ordinance said was that every time then there was a grant award that actually occurred physically after the county board had approved it, the county board chair would convene a grant executive committee. In practice, if the grant is exactly for what the resolution that the county board approved said the grant was going to be for, the county board chair has not convened that grant executive committee because effectively the board has already approved it. So this ordinance change takes out the requirement for the grant executive committee to meet unless when we receive the grant award, it is different than what the county board approved when the original grant was approved. So if it's for $5,000 less or if it's for a longer period of time, then the county board chair would convene the grant executive committee to determine whether or not this particular grant should come back to the county board for another ratification or approval. And finally, the grant executive committee makeup, which was in the original ordinance, is also no longer applicable. So this changes it to, because it referred to a parent committee chair and a member of the budget committee, a minority party representative of the budget committee, this recommendation would be that it would be the board chair, the finance chair, and the minority party caucus chair. So those are effectively the changes that are recommended.
Is there a motion for approval? By Steve Mosher. Is there a second?
Second.
By Stan James. Discussion? Gary?
Is there provision to substitute for
Can you speak
folks?
Up, please?
Is there a procedure for substituting these folks if they're not available at that particular time?
No, not in the ordinance, not as it stated.
Thank you.
Other discussion? Carol?
I move an amendment to the recommendation for the makeup of the grant executive committee to be comprised of the deputy chairs, the assistant deputy chairs of the committees of the county board, meaning the finance committee. Of course, the chair would convene those folks on the makeup of the county board, that the deputies would do that, the assistants.
For clarification, it currently says county board chair, deputy chair of finance, and the minority caucus chair. So you are substituting deputy chair of finance with assistant deputy
yes.
chair of finance. Is that the only substitution?
That's the only substitution. The minority caucus could choose their representative for this committee.
But it's recommending the.
So do you want to change that to the minority party caucus chair or designee?
Designee, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Second. That motion is made by Carol and seconded by Patsy. Is there discussion? Diane.
Could you, like, real quickly tell me the reason behind that? I don't understand what you're trying to do. I'm sorry.
Sure. I'll be glad to. Obviously, this is a correction of a previous committee that should have been operating that has not been since 2000. And so in this case, by substituting the assistant deputy chairs of the finance committee, for instance, or the designee of the minority party, then that allows other board members other than the chairs to be involved in other processes of the county instead of the chairs being on all of the committees.
Any other comments? So we're voting on the amendment. Is the amendment clear? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Guys, see a show of hands. All those in favor. That motion fails. Back to the original. Any other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries.
The next item is also in preparation for the fact that you're going to be starting to look at the fiscal 2013 budget process in May. And the financial policies require annual review of the fees that the county board collects to operate county government. So on pages 31 through whatever, 38, I think. No, 40. Through 41, those are all the fees that are currently collected by the county with the exception of the nursing home and regional planning commission. if you were going to look at fees changes, it's important for you to understand the various categories of fees. So that's explained in the cover memo on pages 28 and 29. Basically, fees are set by requirements of the statutes. Fees can be set by statute and collected only when the county board adopts them. Fees can be set for services provided by certain offices, county clerk, sheriff, and recorder, and where the county board can adopt a resolution to set the fee at a higher dollar value than the statutory maximum if the county board has conducted a cost study. Fees set by the county board pursuant to statutory authority to establish reasonable fees for specific services. Examples of those are the zoning ordinance fees, which you set, animal control ordinance fees, and fees that are set by the statute and assessed at the discretion of the judiciary. Probably the fees that fall under category B and C are the fees over which you have the greatest discretion. So I've pointed out to you on page 29 where there are fees that have statutory maximums, and the county board has not currently set that fee at the statutory maximum. So you could see the potential impact if you did increase that fee to the statutory maximum. Nobody is asking you to do that. I just wanted you to have this information as we head into the budget process. The other thing is that the fees that you can increase based on the actual cost of providing the service for the county clerk, sheriff, and recorder. The last time we did that, we hired Maximus in 2002. They conducted a study in 2003. The cost of the study was $25,000, and the increases in fees to the sheriff's office that were achieved through the changes that could be adopted based on the cost study have netted about a $15,000 annual increase in sheriff's fees. So it took about a year and a half to get our return on investment for that cost study. Just for you to be aware of, in case, you know, there's ever an interest in doing that again, it has been 10 years since we did that, and we would not be able to look at increasing any of those fees at this point in time without doing another comprehensive cost study to document and support it. And that's it. It's just for your information.
Max?
What's the percentage?
Could you use your mic, please?
What's the percentage of the budget in fees?
That's also in the memo. It's 22% of the county's total revenue, right at about $24.5 million.
And if you were to increase, what would that move it to?
Well, it's in the table on page 29. Total, if you increased all those fees to the statutory maximum, it would be a total increase of $545,564. However, only one of those fees goes into the general corporate fund. So only $54,000 would go into the general corporate fund. The court automation fee goes into the court automation fund, which is controlled by the circuit clerk and the presiding judge. The court document storage fee goes into that fund, which is controlled exclusively by the circuit clerk after you approve the budget. And the law library fee goes into the law library fund, which is controlled by the judiciary.
Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much, Deb. Is the auditor here? Is there a motion to accept and place the report on file? By Stephanie, second by Gary. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Treasurer, Dan. I know you're here.
I said I'd pick him up. He didn't want to come. Just kidding. My report's on file on my website. I've got three things I want to talk about tonight. One, we've made our $1 million loan from public safety to the general corporate fund. We do this annually. A few years ago, we did as much as $3 million, and this is to get us through the time between at the end of the tax season all the way to when we start getting tax money in again in May, which leads me to my next thing, real estate tax bills. We're on schedule for a May 1 mailing, which would be the 10th consecutive year that we've been on time with tax bills. And that's due to your township assessors, board review, your supervisor of assessment, your county clerk, treasurer's office, and the IT department. All those have to work together, and we do a really good job here in Champaign County of doing that. And I'd remind you that that doesn't happen everywhere. We're one of maybe a handful of counties that gets their tax bills out on time. We're going to make a change this year with the way we do tax bills. In the past, the county has always printed the tax bills And we'd take those documents and we would send them to a vendor who would stuff them and insert all the different things in them and mail them out. So we'd actually have 75,000 tax bills. It'd be 75,000 envelopes. Well, that worked fine until last year. We had a situation where the vendor unfortunately had a problem and put some people's tax bills in their neighbor's envelope. You can imagine my mail. And rightly so. I don't blame him for being upset about it either. So this year I decided to look for an alternative. I found an alternative with a company called Mail Communications. And so what we'll be doing this year is we'll just be sending electronically all the information to that company. They'll be printing the actual forms, the envelopes, and the inserts there, doing all the mailing. But the advantage is that they can combine tax bills. If Tom Betts had five different properties, he'd get all five in one envelope. Yeah, I meant 15, of course. But there are companies that have several hundred, and that can make a big difference. Not only are we not mailing them individually, we're not giving them 600 different inserts, we're giving them one insert. So the advantage for Champaign County is on a normal tax year, it's about $41,000 to send out tax bills. That's postage, ink, paper, everything. That's about 54 cents a tax bill. This company will do it for 53 cents a tax bill. But if you have more than one going to a person, that second one only goes to 12 cents. You can obviously see that's a heck of a savings. We think we're going to be able to go from 41,000 to about 29,000 to send out tax bills. So I think that'll be a really good thing for everybody. And finally, Tom mentioned the nursing home. And I worry about general corporate quite a bit, but I admit that I worry about the nursing home a lot too. And I worry about their cash flow. And I've spoken to them about a lot of different opportunities or perceived opportunities that a bank may be able to give us. But I want to give you an idea about today. And if you looked at the cash fund today for the nursing home, it's about $919,000. That's their cash balance today. You got to remember that $919,878 of that is borrowed in the form of tax anticipation warrants. They borrow their real estate money early, and then they have to pay it back starting in May. Now, of course, they still owe the general corporate fund $333,000. So that $919,000, in my way of looking at it, is really a negative $292,000. So I worry about those things. So don't take your eye off the ball. I certainly don't, and I know Deb doesn't, and I know they're working hard. This is not of their making, but it's still a problem. We've still got to make sure we keep a real good watch on what's happening. So I'd ask, unless there's any questions, I'd certainly be glad to answer that. If not, I'd ask that my report be accepted and placed on file.
So moved.
I didn't hear who moved it originally. Who did? John. Okay. And seconded by Geraldo. Any questions for Dan, Carol?
Just one. When we did the loan last month to the General Court for Public Safety, how do and when does that go back to public safety?
It's going to be paid back within 12 months, but we'll be paying it back in November.
In November.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you so much, Dan.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. Under other business, off of the addendum, County Clerk's Office approval of Illinois State Board of Elections Voter Registration State Grant 2012. Is there a motion for approval? By Ralph, seconded by Al. Discussion? Steve.
Thanks, Brendan. I was wondering if Gordy would mind giving us a brief rundown of exactly what's happening here.
Gordy would love to make it brief.
Have I told you about my commissary fund? This is an annual thing from the state. We ask them for about $45,000. We get almost $18,000 total. We traditionally use this to reimburse our automation fund for personnel costs related to programming of our voter registration database.
Any other questions for Gordy while he's up? Thank you very much. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries. There is no other business unless anyone has anything. There's no chair's report. Four, consent. A, 1, 2, 3, and 4. C, 1. G, off of the addendum, 1. That is it from finance. Next up is fellow White Sox fan Michael Richards with Justice Social Services.
Go Sox. We have first up our agency report with the Children's Advocacy Center.
Thank you very much for having me here tonight. I want to let you know how much I appreciate the opportunity to come and talk with you about the work that we do at the Champaign County Children's Advocacy Center. My name is Mike Williams. I've been the director of the Children's Advocacy Center since February of 2002. I've worked for the county since 1984 when I first started in the probation department. Some of you I've known since that time, and others I haven't yet had the opportunity to meet. So, again, it's a very welcome opportunity to be here tonight, and it's especially appropriate since April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month. And I'll talk a little bit about that more later. I thought it was appropriate, or I think it's appropriate, to maybe start with a little history of the Children's Advocacy Center. I won't go too far back and bore you with a lot of history, but in 1989 in Illinois, they passed what was called the Illinois Child Advisory Act, or Child Advocacy Act. And what that did was it required all counties in the state of Illinois to develop a protocol for how to handle child sexual abuse cases in their jurisdiction. It didn't require that counties start a Children's Advocacy Center, so we didn't have one here. In Champaign County, they started a few in the state, DuPage County, McLean County started in the early 90s. There were a few that were springing up in the early 90s. The Champaign County Child Advocacy Advisory Board, which was formed as a result of the 1999 Act, began to take steps in 1999 to establish a Children's Advocacy Center here in Champaign County, and they did that by applying for some grant funding. And they decided that the purpose of the center would be twofold. One would be to provide a safe, welcoming, child-friendly place where children could be brought to be interviewed by specially trained professionals whenever there was an allegation that that child had either been sexually abused or seriously physically abused. It was also designated as the place where those children and their families would receive specialized follow-up services, services that were designed to help the children and their families overcome the trauma of child abuse. Prior to the establishment of the Children's Advocacy Center, most of the children involved in these types of cases here in Champaign County and in other places where they don't have children's advocacy centers were interviewed at schools, at homes, in squad rooms, in police stations, places that were not particularly child-friendly. The Child Advocacy Advisory Board here in Champaign County knew that there was a better way to do that, and that was to establish a children's advocacy center. And so in 1989, the Children's Advocacy Center was established here in Champaign County. And in August of 2000, the first interviews of children began to occur at the Children's Advocacy Center, which, for those of you who were here at that time, you might remember was housed in a corner of the state's attorney's office, actually down in the diversion office on the first floor of the old courthouse. So we started there in August of 2000. We started out kind of slow because during the startup period, we were developing the team concept among all of the different partners on the multidisciplinary team. We were training team members, and we were refining the center's protocol. The CAC board adopted its first protocol in July of 2001. The CAC is governed by a governing board made up of 14 members. The current chair of the Children's Advocacy Center board is State's Attorney Julia Reitz. All of the major law enforcement agencies in Champaign County, as well as the Department of Children and Family Services, the Court Services Department, medical, mental health, and education professionals are all represented on the Champaign County Children's Advocacy Center Governing Board. In August of 2001, we moved out of the corner of the courthouse and we moved to our first permanent home, which, again, for those of you who've been around a while, you'll remember was 1601 East Main Street, which was the former youth detention center building along Main Street next to the old nursing home. In February of 2003, the Children's Advocacy Center was accredited by the National Children's Alliance. It was a very rigorous process, and being accredited by the National Children's Alliance is recognition that a Children's Advocacy Center has achieved a high level of multidisciplinary response to allegations of child abuse in their jurisdiction, and that the children who are subject to those types of intervention are that their experience is improved as a result of the team concept. I mean, we remained at the facility on East Main Street until September of 2007 when we relocated to our present facility. We are located at 201 West Canyon Road in Champaign, which many of you know is the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District building. So we rent some space from them. It's a very convenient location. It's one block west of Neal Street along the frontage road of Interstate 74, just off the interstate. And its proximity to the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, we believe, is a real benefit to our clients. We have many clients of the Children's Advocacy Center who access health care services through the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. So it's very convenient for them being right next door. Although we are a very separate facility, our doors are kept locked at all times so that we can maintain the confidentiality and privacy of all of the clients that come to the Children's Advocacy Center. But it does allow our clients who are working with the Public Health District to access those services, and it encourages some of the others to avail themselves of those services as well. And in February 2009, we were reaccredited by the National Children's Alliance. So, again, they've recognized that the work that we're doing here in Champaign County, all of our partner agencies, are improving the well-being of the children who are subjected to the child abuse process. Just a few numbers for you. From 2002 to 2011, and I used 2002, although we started conducting the first interviews in August of 2000, I used 2002 kind of as our benchmark because that was the first full year that we were in a permanent facility. So I used that as a benchmark when we're talking about numbers. So since from 2002 to 2011, 2,103 children were interviewed at the Children's Advocacy Center. That's an average of just over 200 children a year. And 65% of the interviews that have been done at the Children's Advocacy Center during that time have been joint investigations between local law enforcement agencies and the Department of Children and Family Services. So those are the two major partners. All of the investigations that are done at the Children's Advocacy Center are initiated by one or both of those agencies. The funding for the Children's Advocacy Center, our FY 2012 budget, is just under $200,000. Our primary funders include the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services, the Champaign County Mental Health Board, which we're grateful to the Mental Health Board. They have been our partners from the very beginning and gave us quite a bit of grant money initially to remodel 1601 East Main Street for the Children's Advocacy Center. We're also supported by grants from the Illinois Attorney General, the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority, and our accrediting body, which I mentioned earlier, is the National Children's Alliance. We have seen some cuts in our grants over the last couple of years. Our funders have been fairly stable, but as you know, the economic climate is not real good right now. Our Attorney General grant declined 5% in fiscal year 2011, and for the current fiscal year 2012, we saw a 10% decline in that grant. Our DCFS grant, which is our major funder, has been relatively stable for the last 7 or 8 years, although we will be experiencing a minimal cut of 1% for fiscal year 2013 in that grant. We've also had several smaller grants from businesses and organizations in Champaign-Urbana, including the Champaign-Urbana Junior League, as well as donations from individuals, churches, and various civic organizations. We also received some voluntary contributions from the local police departments that use the Children's Advocacy Center. And the Children's Advocacy Center was also a beneficiary of a third-party fundraiser that was held in 2011. We also hold a fundraiser. We have been involved in a fundraiser at the Children's Advocacy Center since 2008. And, again, for those of you who have been around for a while, you've probably seen different items or different things about this or heard me talk about it, but it's called the Champions for Children Walk. And some information about this. We partner our local walk with the Twin Cities Twosome, which is an event that's held at Crystal Lake Park, and they're in their 21st year right now. This year's Champions for Children Walk is going to be held on Saturday, May 12th, again in Crystal Lake Park. And I brought some brochures, and I'll leave them over here by the door for those of you who are interested in picking them up. If you would like to come out and walk with us on May 12th, we would love to have you. And as I mentioned at the beginning, it is especially appropriate that I'm here right now because April is National Child Abuse Prevention Month, and we're involved in several activities surrounding that and in recognition of that. This is the 6th year that the Children's Advocacy Center has sponsored the Blue Kids campaign, and I think maybe some of you have seen the little blue silhouettes, plywood silhouettes of boys and girls. They are out at 36 locations around Champaign County. Most of them are in Champaign-Urbana, but a lot of them are in the surrounding communities. This is part of what's called the National Silent Witness Campaign. The Blue Kids were constructed by an industrial arts class at Mohammed Seymour High School for us, and we put them up again, as I said, for the last 6 years. The Blue Kids are out there to remind everybody that about the children that we have in our communities that are abused and neglected, that those children are out there. And it's also they're also to serve as a reminder or a prompt to those people to encourage them that if you know a child that you think is being abused or neglected, that you not be a silent witness, that you speak up for that child and make a report to the authorities so that that child and the family can get the help that they need. Also this year for National Child Abuse Prevention Month, we have teamed up with for the first time with Crisis Nursery in CASA, and I have some cards that describe some of the events that we've teamed up with the other two agencies on. And on some of the cards, there's a little blue pin. This little blue ribbon is the national symbol for Child Abuse Prevention Month. So if you want to pick up a card and take a ribbon and wear that during the month of April, we would certainly appreciate that. I would like to mention one of the activities that we've been involved with CASA and this collaboration is CASA received a grant from the Junior League of Champaign-Urbana to purchase 472 pinwheels. So if you've been by the courthouse, right out in front of the courthouse there, along with a couple of the blue kids, are 472 blue and silver pinwheels. Each of the pinwheels represents a child that is involved in the abuse and neglect system here in Champaign County. I think it's a very striking display, a very eye-catching display. So if you haven't been by the courthouse, I would certainly encourage you to drive by and take a look at that. So I want to, of course, leave time for questions. I'm not sure how much time we have, but before we do that, I want to thank you again for having me here tonight. And you are welcome to visit us at the Children's Advocacy Center anytime. Please email me or call me. I would be happy to show you around. Ms. Ammons has been to our center. I'm very proud of the way the center looks and the services that we offer. And if you would like to come and visit us, I would certainly welcome the opportunity to show it up to you.
Any questions? Mr. Alex?
Swan, you actually sort of took the words out of my mouth when you mentioned CASA. I was going to ask you what your working relationship, what the working relationship is between your center and Champaign County CASA.
We have a very good working relationship. Actually, the director of CASA, Rush Record, and I worked together in the probation department, so our relationship goes way back to the early 90s or the late 80s. We share a lot of clients. There is a lot of mutuality in the clients that we have. A lot of the clients that we have at the Children's Advocacy Center, after they've been interviewed at the Children's Advocacy Center, if court proceedings are initiated, abuse and neglect proceedings, in addition to maybe criminal court proceedings, then they would be appointed a CASA. So we have an overlap there. Of course, we also have some children that come to us that are already in the foster care system or already involved in the court system, and as a result of that, they make a disclosure of abuse, and so they're brought to the center to be interviewed. So we have a lot of overlap there. And then with the Crisis Nursery, the other partner with us and the In Child Abuse Prevention Month activities, they're, of course, a very integral partner. They provide a lot of respite for the families that we have that are going through a lot of stress and a lot of changes and upheaval. They provide a lot of services for those families. So.
Thank you.
Ms. Petrie.
You mentioned on average of about 200 children a year. What size staff do you have to work with this number of children?
We are a staff of two. It's myself along with our case manager, who's Elaine Mitchell. We're the only staff there. Now, of course, we have our partner agencies, all the law enforcement agencies in the Department of Children and Family Services, who are in and out of the building conducting the investigations. So although they're not staff of the Children's Advocacy Center, they're employed by their own individual agencies. They are at the Children's Advocacy Center frequently. And we also we have a grant, as I mentioned earlier, from the Illinois Criminal Justice Information Authority, and we use the bulk of the proceeds of that grant to contract with two local therapists, two licensed therapists, to provide free crisis intervention counseling services to the children and families that come to the center. So, again, although they're not staff of the center, they're providing a very integral service.
Any other questions? Mr. Jerry?
Just a comment. Mike, you're an exceptional person, and we're all very grateful for all the work that you've done with the kids for this county.
Thank you very much.
I would just thank you for recognizing the mental health board's involvement, because I've sat on that board since about the time of the inception, and they have continued to be very supportive and do have a voting member on your board as well.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, thanks a lot.
Okay, again, thank you very much, and again, feel free to come and visit us anytime. Thank you.
Ms. Ammons.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion, an omnibus motion for items 1 through 5 for those monthly reports to be placed on file.
Is there a second to that motion?
Second.
Kurt seconds that. Okay, we have an omnibus motion. Is there any discussion on the monthly reports? All in favor of placing those reports on file, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed to that? Motion passes. And on monthly reports number 6, we have a letter from the public defender. This is the first time he's followed up on our suggestion to give some context to his to the numbers that he gives us every month. And that's on page 50. If anybody hasn't looked at that, they've had some turnover in their office. Is there a motion to put that on file?
Move to accept the letter.
All courts. And Lorraine Court seconded that. Ms. Ammons?
I didn't move item 6. I did send an email to Mr. Rosenbaum just asking for some demographic information. I looked at the report, and there's about 478 cases for February that I requested demographic information for. That's not in the letter. Thank you.
Okay. You requested him put that in these letters he sends us every month?
I requested it. Well, I personally requested it, but mm-hmm. You could request that as a chair.
I'll add that to the list. Are there any other comments? Okay. All in favor of putting the letter from the public defender on file?
Aye.
All opposed? That also passes. Is there any other business? Ms. Petrie.
Mr. Chair, several months ago it was scheduled we were going to have a report on the nursing home, and for reasons that didn't come to pass, will we be having a report next month, especially since there are financial circumstances that it might be very useful for all of us to have a better understanding about?
By their bylaws, the nursing home board's reports go directly to the county board, and there will be a report in May.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Is there any other business? Okay. Chair has no report. We have nothing to put on the consent agenda. So thank you, everyone. That was justice.
Policy moves item A1, Supervisor of Assessment Recommendation for Division of the County into 4 Assessment Districts. Moved by Mr. Kurtz, second by Ms. Berkson. Any discussion on the request from the Supervisor of Assessment? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries. County Administrator.
The vacant positions listing is there for your information. You will note that it's very short. We don't have many vacant positions these days. The next item is a request to submit the proposed positions for the Veterans Assistance Commission to the Job Content Evaluation Committee for classification, evaluation, and position description development. What this means is we would simply work with the individual who's been designated as the VAC's representative to go through the process of defining how these proposed positions would fit within the structure of Champaign County's salary administration and positions designation. It would come back to you ultimately to approve the job descriptions and classification for the positions, and if you approve that, you would then forward it to finance for consideration of whether or not the positions will actually be created.
Move approval.
Move approval by Mr. Langenheim. Is there
second.
A second? Second by Mr. Quisenberry. Any discussion or questions about this? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries.
The next item, I would point you to an updated version of the purchasing policy updates that was at your desk tonight that has yellow highlighting. With some input from Ms. Petrie, there have been some amendments from what was sent out with your packet. Basically, as a result of going through the RFP for the consultant for jail services, some questions or issues of further clarification in our purchasing policy, which could make it more clear, came up. So this is being done with the intent of clearing up where there was an opportunity to state more clearly what was intended and or to clean up procedurally how we have handled these issues. So the amendments, as you've noted, are highlighted in bold and italics where there's strike through that is being recommended to be eliminated, and then the yellow would be additional changes.
We'll entertain a motion for approval on the changes. Mr. James, second by Mr. Kurtz. Any discussion on the changes? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? That motion carries. Thank you. County Clerk, February 2012, March 2012 reports. We'll entertain a motion for the County Clerk's report.
So moved.
I'm sorry, I cannot see the mover. Thank you, Mr. Kibler. Seconded by Mr. Rosales. Thank you. Any discussion on those two reports or questions? I get the clerk around here somewhere, but anyway. Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Thank you. Those will be placed on file. Other business, D1 resolution honoring retiring County Board Member Brad Jones. And if I could put both of those together, if the board is okay with that, resolution honoring retired County Board Member Alan Newdall. Move adoption by Mr. Betts. Second. Thank you, Ms. Esri. I know your name because I see it all the time. Any discussion on these two resolutions? Seeing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposition? Thank you. Those motions carry. Under Chair's report, we have an overview of the historic timeline and county board actions regarding the public safety sales tax. This issue has been raised in public participation, and obviously the board needs to be definitely abreast on this issue as we go forward on the consideration of the jail funding project. And I've asked Ms. Busey to put a timeline together, an explanation, certainly for me, and I thought the board would benefit from that explanation as well. And Ms. Busey is going to go through that slide for us quite briefly.
Handouts
that are... They have been sent out to all board members, so I know that's you should have received that.
It is what is in your packet, and basically on page 68, you'll see the evolution of events. On July 23rd, 1998, the county board adopted Resolution 4012 to place the question of approval of a special county retailer's occupation tax for public safety on the November ballot. And as is indicated on...
it was in August of 1998. I'll remember that.
No, it was July. Sorry.
That's why we're doing this, because other people have other memories.
The actual question that was placed on the ballot is there in your packet on page 69. That is what the voters voted on. That is not necessarily what the campaign materials for the campaign for approving the quarter cent said, but that is the actual vote that the voters voted on. Then in September of 1998, the board approved the resolution establishing the projects to be used with the quarter cent fund proceeds. And that was ordinance number 572, and it starts on page 70 of your board packet. Subsequently,
can I ask a question as we go? And if you all want to ask questions so that you could get a little clarity on this as we go, the public safety sales tax question that's on page 69 ultimately came back to the county board, and 572 was the result. That was the ordinance for...
No. The question, Resolution 4012 tells the county clerk, put this question on the ballot in November 1998.
Okay.
In September 2 months after they adopted to put the question on the ballot, which they probably had to do by sometime in August to make it on the ballot. In September, the county board adopted ordinance number 572 to define how they intended to use the quarter cent sales tax if the voters approved it in November.
If it passed, thank you.
If it passed.
Okay.
And that's all set out in that ordinance.
Okay.
In 2003, the county board adopted ordinance number 683. As many of you will recall, this was an economically challenging time. There was a significant recession in 2002. And the county board at the time it adopted this ordinance was documenting that it intended to substantially use the public safety sales tax to support the ongoing maintenance and operation of the county's public safety facilities. And so that resolution is there on pages 73 and 74 of your packet. When the county board adopted the original ordinance, number 572, the statute spelled out how the question had to be placed on the ballot, and that is as it was stated in Resolution 4012. And there was no statutory allowance or authority to sunset the tax. The county board could not present it to the voters in such a way that the tax would automatically be sunsetted at a point in the future. The statutes just simply didn't allow for that. That changed in 2008 on page 79 of your packet. The public safety sales tax legislation changed and does now allow for if you were to place a public safety sale, and if you were to ask the voters to approve another quarter cent for public safety for another use, you would be able to include in the question the fact that the tax would sunset at a particular point in time. That's just for you to understand the sequence of those events. While the county board in ordinance number 572 talked about sunsetting the public safety sales tax when the courthouse bonds were paid off, it did not have the ability to place that question to the voters in that form at that point in time.
Mr. Betts.
Mm-hmm. I'm Ms. Busey, and this is a question you might not be able to answer, but over the years, how many times have we borrowed against the quarter cent sales tax to pay for budgetary shortfalls and what have you?
We have done a loan from the public safety sales tax for, I didn't bring that with me, but we haven't needed a loan every single year, but since 2001, probably we've borrowed from the public safety sales tax at least 6 or 7 times. There were some years where we didn't have to, for the general corporate fund, is that what you mean? There were some years where we didn't have to do it because the fund balance was at a high enough level that it wasn't required in the general corporate fund, and that would have been like in 2004, 2005, that time frame.
May I have a follow-up, Madam Chair?
Yes, you may.
In relationship to borrowing on the quarter sales tax to shore up the general corporate fund, was any of that shoring up as a result of nursing home issues that you recall?
Well, the decline in the general corporate fund balance is definitely attributable to the fact that the county ended up granting a little over $2 million to the nursing home between 2005 and 2008.
I think you know where I'm going with this because of what's happening to the nursing home, but I'm not going to go all the way until we know more information.
Yes, Mr. Alex.
When is the... I understand the county didn't have the option of sunsetting this on the ballot question. Even if they had been able to do that, when will the obligations that are being paid for, as anticipated by the original ballot action, when will those obligations end?
2027.
That is specifically what? That's the date that the last bond
of the courthouse
on the courthouse is paid off.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'll go to Mr. Maxwell and come back.
I noticed in the ordinance that was passed in 98.
I'm sorry, Mr. Maxwell. We really need to invest some money into these. I hope the next board does, but I can barely hear you.
I'll try it again. In ordinance 572 in 98, there was a specific amount of money, $250,000, to be set aside for the capital improvement fund, and that's to do maintenance and that sort of thing for these public safety buildings. Now, in the ordinance that was passed in 2003, the wording was changed. It just says to pay the annual maintenance cost of the Champaign County courts and so on. So I don't see anywhere in there a specific amount that was set aside for the capital improvements funds. Was that a change? And do we still set aside a certain amount of money each year from that fund for the capital improvement fund?
The original $250,000 was for justice technology that is spelled out in that paragraph that you're talking about in the original ordinance, and that is addressed in number two in ordinance number 683 to provide funding for the technology needs of the public safety offices. It varies by the time ordinance 683 was adopted. The county had entered into a contract with Jano Justice Systems for a $2.8 million purchase of a software system for integrated justice technology. And that purchase had been covered, basically. But the ongoing replacement and ongoing software licensing and services maintenance is still paid from the Public Safety Sales Tax Fund. And it varies, but it probably varies somewhere between $170,000 and $250,000 a year.
Yes, sir, Ms.
Maxwell. As a follow-up, Deb, does any of this money in that particular fund go for the maintenance of the physical plant attributable to the public safety buildings?
That's separate. The money that goes into the capital replacement fund is for justice technology only. The money that goes towards the public safety facilities is monies that every month the public safety sales tax fund covers the cost of utilities for the public safety buildings currently.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. I'll go to Mr. James. I'll come back around.
I was just wondering, after I heard Alex talking there, is there a possibility in 2027 then, when everything's paid off and done, which I probably am going to answer my own question, but would there be a possibility this tax would go away, or is it going to be there for the rest of my life, which I'm going to live to about as long as Steve?
Certainly you can write a new ordinance. And
well, I'm just asking because, you know,
put it forth.
The intent was, if I remember all the stuff that was going on at that time, and that was back when I was quite young, that eventually when everything was paid off, it would go away. But as we all know, in reality, when a fee or a tax is set, it seems to remain forever, and I'm one that I would like to see stuff go away if possible. Hopefully the economy will turn around and we'll all be doing a lot better. But my question is, do you foresee that? Because now with this planning going on now, I just see this becoming a never-ending quarter-cent sales tax.
Well, certainly, you know, that's a decision that the county board, a future county board, could make based on this year's budget. There is probably over $1 million of public safety money being spent that benefits the general corporate fund between the technology for the justice system and the utilities for the public facilities. And there is a little over another $200,000 that is being spent for delinquency prevention grants. So, you know, the quarter cent is projected to bring in about $4.3 million this year, and probably $1.3 million of that is being used for operations. So that would have to go away for the tax to be sunsetted, and I can almost guarantee that as that goes away, the fund that will have to bear that burden is the general corporate fund.
Follow up on that.
Yes.
I guess I sort of look at it, it's a relief to the property owners because we're not having to pay higher taxes on our property because this sort of helped offset some of that cost in my mind. But I guess when I look at a pool of money, like we always hear in the federal level, that if it's there, people tend to want to spend it. instead of letting it go away and recouping cost otherwise. I just sometimes when I see a tax and then we add more all the time, I just wish somewhere down the line we can get spending under control, I guess.
Thank you. Mr. Langenhorn.
The bonds won't be paid off until 2027, correct?
2027.
So that's 15 years from now. I think we're being a bit presumptuous to act on what we think is going to happen 15 years from now. Thank God I won't be here then.
Mr. Mosier.
I think Tom and I ought to take a few minutes to go back over the history of where this came from. Back in 1998, we were under the gun to do something with a courthouse, and we'd already started on a youth detention center, and we didn't know how we were going to pay for it. And this thing came to the board, and I don't care what Deb says, it was in July of 1998. It was voted down. The judge called me, and I think he called Tom Betts, and he said, you guys got to try one more time. We brought it back in August, and he'll verify that. And it passed by a vote of 14 to 13. And after that was done, and this is one of the great moments in this board's history, the Democrats and some of the Republicans came together and put together this campaign about how we were going to spend the money. And we had compromise on both sides. I wanted to knock the old courthouse down. Everybody in Urbana wanted to save it. That's how that old courthouse still remains. It turned into a monster like old buildings do. But we spent a ton of money on it, and we got it done because Schunkleiter was sitting in Monticello making phone calls to Greg Townsend telling him, if you don't build a courthouse, I'm going to get the Urbana Commission to build one for you. And we'd have lost all control of that. And it would all been on real estate. This county passed PTEL payment limitations on property tax before this was done, and that has limited our ability to collect property tax. This county, and I think there's five others in the state around the collar. But to me, this was one of the great accomplishments of my 20 years here. Mr. Betts, Mr. O'Connor, and Lloyd, and Lorraine were here, and we had many long discussions between myself and Mr. Betts when I was chairman about how we were doing things, and then in 2000, the thing turned over, and I got to ask a lot of questions after that happened. But this county would have been in dire straits in 2003 and today if we hadn't had that money. And it didn't come on property tax, and I think this will be one of the great things that I did while I was here, because Jerry Parr and I chaired that committee that went out and sold this, and it was a tough sale on both sides. And we're surrounded now by Ford and Douglas and Pyatt that have tried three and four times past this because they're in the same position we were in. You got to do it. The judge says you got to do it. And when he says do it, I'll do it however it takes, whether it's a building commission or you can do it yourself. And we did it ourselves. And it was a long grind, but we got through it. And I'm very proud of how this has all worked out with all these buildings, and I'm glad today that we're still not dipping into General Corp to pay some of the bills on them, because I don't think we'd be in very good shape right now the last 2 years if we hadn't had that money.
Mr. Betts.
I want to echo some of what Mr. Mosier said. We both have probably been here too long because we remember all of this stuff. And what's interesting as you're bringing this stuff up is I remember the first time, because the first time we put it on the ballot, it was defeated. It was heartbreaking. It was difficult. And it was a totally different ordinance that was passed. And at the time, we all knew an ordinance is an ordinance is an ordinance. You pass it, the next board can repeal it, the next board can amend it. It happens. None of us, when we finally put this on the ballot and it passed, no one anticipated that we'd be going to an economic crisis where we would be using quarter-cent money to leverage loans, et cetera. It has proven a very flexible mechanism for county funding. And that comes from someone who does not particularly like the idea of sales taxes. I think they can be very regressive. But what saved this sales tax, and by the way, when we put it on the ballot, it did not go along party lines. It was a 14-13 vote, and you would discover that people were kind of all over the place. This argument that we've seen over the jail in the past few months was nothing compared to the arguments that we got into at this board over the principle of sales taxes, how we should build a courthouse, if we should build a courthouse. It was painful. I can remember situations in which people left this room crying. And you know who I'm talking about, Mr. Mosier, and so do you, Mr. Carter. You're looking right at me, and you know who I'm talking about. It was hard. It was difficult. But we did do it. I can remember having fundraisers and what have you in my own home. I can remember being in downtown Champaign, talking with Mr. Mosier and Mr. Trumbo, and we were all trying to work out language. I think somewhere if we had tapes of some of our sessions, you would discover that several of us in this room said, you know, this is never going to sunset. It's never going away. We know darn well we're going to have to keep using this money to fund the justice system. And others said, absolutely, it's going away. It got written as if it was going to sunset. There was no legal authority for it to sunset, which is a long way, way of saying that it's a long time before this money can be used to build a $20 million jail or a $15 million. I don't see the money sitting there right now. I think there's a lot of other obligations that are rather substantial, and this is my way of saying some of the panic that is kind of there may not be justified. It's going to be a slow, slow process that's going to take place over a period of multiple terms of board members. And that was true when we built the courthouse. It didn't all happen in one election cycle. That is true of the youth detention center. I began working on the youth detention center before I was on the board. That was the reason I ran for county board, is my concerns over that issue. And it was years of being on the county board before we were able to tackle it. The quarter cent let us pay for that, because the clear voters were not enamored of the idea of property tax increases. I don't think they are right now either. I don't think they're enamored of sales taxes either. They're very high right now, in if you add them all up with school and everything else. We are a very high sales tax community. The county has a lot of revenue problems. Schools have revenue problems. Everyone has them. This was part of our solution, but it is not 100% of the solution for anything. We have very long-term obvious issues that folks have raised in the back row repeatedly about maintaining the facilities we have, keeping them up. And we don't have the money to do that. And that is something that I know Mr. Mosier and others, as we leave the board, we know that that is a mistake that we've left for the future boards to deal with. And it's a huge mistake. I see Mr. Carter going like that. He knows. We have not done this. I know Mr. Jay knows. I know Mr. Connor knows. That money is not there. And we have a huge, huge problem that the next couple of boards are going to have to deal with, because buildings have got to be maintained. Absolutely have to be. And that's part of the problem we have in the jails. I've been at the new youth detention center. It's a whole lot better than the others, but it has to be fully maintained. And we really have to address that issue in a very militant way. And quarter cent's part of it, but it's not all of it. Never remain.
Mr. Langenheim.
I add one other thing. The quarter cent might be used to make this building habitable.
Mr. Carter. Yes, sir.
Oh, thank you. And everybody had to go back and tell the constituent, please support this. And this guy said what I said in the previous meeting about our taxpayers. They were really good when we needed them. And that's the guys we should respect them and appreciate their participation because we really needed them. And they came out big for us.
I think there's unfortunate some of the board members that have been on the board during that campaign know how hard it is to sell a tax to anybody and to market the tax with the sunset, as Mr. James says, in the ordinance, not necessarily in the question, and then the next board changes it because the board has the authority to do it. I think that's a question that needs to be raised by the taxpayers as to how much of this tax money they're willing to give if a board can simply change the agreement afterwards. So I'll take Ms. Anderson's, and then we don't have an action on this item, but I'll just take Ms.
Just
Anderson's and
close. I add to that, though, too. On the other hand, they may complain about the taxes, the sunsetting, but then they also complain to you about not keeping up the maintenance of the building. So, you know.
I guess it's the allocation that we need to consider as a board. Should we pay the utilities or should we actually maintain the building according to what the public safety was originally drafted for, was the maintenance of the building. So the board would have to weigh in on that at some point. But I agree, Mr. Betts, there's a lot that needs to be looked at, and I'm sure we'll be looking at that for this board and the next. At this point, let's see. I'll designate the items for consent. A1, B2, and B3, as well as C1, D1, and 2. That's all from policy.
Chair would entertain a motion to adjourn unless there's other business.
Thank you. We adjourn.